71st anniversary of the Japanese Empire air attack on U.S. naval and air installations at Pearl Harbor. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for joining me today on RBN, for people who can handle the truth. RBN's website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit spingola.com. During the program, email your questions or comments to spingola1@yahoo.com. My regular email is deanna@spingola.com, but I do not access that email address during the program. You may join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by going to spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the second hour after we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. Today we don't have a guest. I'm going to be talking about Japan and the influence that that the Anglo-Americans had in that country. And in my second book, I have a chapter called Japan, the Banker's Mercenary in Asia. Now, whatever they did, what they did in Russia, was with the acquiescence of the British and the Americans. Anglo-American imperialistic cooperation and mutual plundering began in 1897, the year of the first official Zionist conference, when Britain and the United States formalized their alliance through the organization of the Pilgrims Society. Especially since 1900, American foreign policy and British foreign policy seem synonymous due to their intimate symbiotic relationship. Britain viewed America differently after Admiral Dewey invaded the Philippines, an opening to the massive riches of the Far East. On September 6, 1899, Britain's Alfred E. Hippisley helped draft the American diplomatic notes. Theodore Roosevelt, who was soon to become president, certainly favored the Anglo-American Accord. He said, and I quote, "Real liberty and real progress are bound up with the prosperity of the English-speaking peoples. I should very strongly favor this country taking a hand if the European continent selected this opportunity to try and smash the British Empire." Unquote. Hayashi Tadusso, I'm just butchering those names, but the Japanese minister in London, and Henry Petty Fitzmaurice, representing Britain, signed the Anglo-Japanese Treaty on January 30th, 1902. On February 8th, 1904, Japan launched a surprise attack on the Russian fleet in the harbor of Port Arthur, over three decades before they would use the same sneak attack tactic against America at Pearl Harbor and in the Philippines in December 1941. However, in 1904, let's hold that thought. We'll pick it up on the other side of the break. We'll be right back.
Are you prepared? Are you ready? You should be. CampingSurvival.com is your source for camping supplies, survival gear, and survival food. Whether you are an emergency preparedness-minded individual interested in MRE and colloidal silver, a hardcore hiker in need of paracord, a water filter system, and fire piston, or just need a basic first aid kit or emergency kit for the family, CampingSurvival.com is the right place. Call CampingSurvival.com today. Toll free 800-537-1339. CampingSurvival.com. It's not about the end of the world. It's not about surviving a hypothetical plane crash. It's about the satisfaction you get knowing you can take care of yourself and or your family in any situation, anytime, anywhere. Call now 800-537-1339.
Herbal Healer Academy's new summer specials. Our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. Organic liquid iodine, liquid cal, Meg, vitamin D, CoQ10 with hawthorn, colon enhancer, Super 2, natural laxative, our exceptional product, Connexin, memory power, and Super Male and Femplex. All on sale for the summer at herbalhealer.com. Also, 10% off on the HHA Survival Course. This is an important time to have this information. Might save your life. Nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education. herbalhealer.com. Free online newsletter. Quality natural medicine supplier since 1988. We ship the same day you place your order. Free 128-page catalog with your first order. Go to herbalhealer.com today. herbalhealer.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. And let me just do a brief recap. The British and the Americans decided that in 1897 that they would join forces in the warfare and plundering activities that they would enjoy over the next several decades. In addition to this, Britain, who had already agreed to join America, signed the Anglo-Japanese Treaty on January 30th, 1902. On February 8th, 1904, just over 2 years later, Japan launched a secret surprise attack on the Russian fleet in the harbor of Port Arthur, over three decades before they would use the same tactic against America at Pearl Harbor and in the Philippines in December 1941. However, in 1904, because of that Anglo-Japanese treaty giving Japan the green light, the American press had no criticisms of this Japanese strategy. The New York Times praised the prompt, enterprising, and gallant feat of the Japanese, and the Lewis Globe Democrat commended the dash and intelligence of the resourceful Sons of Nippon. This attack established Japan as the dominant power in the Far East. They would use this power later on to collect a lot of gold, which ultimately ended up in somebody else's hands. Now, since the end of the Russo-Japanese War, which was 1904 to 1905, Japan's economic presence and political interest in Manchuria had been increasing. The Treaty of Portsmouth had awarded Japan the lease of the South Manchurian Railroad branch of the China Far East Railway. On April 19, 1919, at the Paris Peace Conference, Japanese officials attempted to insert a racial equality clause into the League of Nations covenant, but the Western powers overruled it, which the Japanese viewed as an affront. On February 6, 1922, America and Britain created the Nine Power Treaty, apparently as a method for constraining the Japanese from developing the resources they had acquired from Russia in Manchuria. So it was okay for them to go ahead and attack Russia, but then when they wanted a little bit more power, then that wasn't quite right. So Britain and America created this Nine Power Treaty, and this was a method of constraining the Japanese from developing those resources. Now, Japan saw this as a commercial rivalry against them. China was Japan's principal customer, as China had not developed her own resources and industries. That treaty, which Japan largely ignored, limited Japan's activities in Manchuria and Mongolia, while it allowed unlimited Chinese immigration into the area. And then going ahead quite a few years, on June 6, 1932, President Herbert Hoover appointed Bostonian Joseph C. Grew, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, which, remember, was just developed after the end of World War I. He was a Morgan relative by marriage. He was appointed the U.S. ambassador to Japan. Now, remember that ambassadors usually work with the local authorities and actually just kind of tell them what to do, how to manage their resources, who to let into the country. They have a lot more power. They're not just over there being friendly. They're over there as a handling some of the affairs of the country that they are an ambassador to. Joseph Grew's wife was also the great niece of Commodore Perry. Grew's family were longtime bankers who helped finance the early opium trade into China. Hoover and J.P. Morgan partner Thomas W. Lamont, who also belonged to the Council on Foreign Relations and later would become a member of the Bilderberg Group and was also the Pilgrim Society chairman, was one of Hoover's biggest financial supporters. Hoover mentored Joseph Grew when he was the Undersecretary of State. Agents of the Institute of Pacific Relations, the IPR, a 10-country association concerned with affairs in the Pacific, subtly induced the Japanese to consider militarily targeting the United States. Now, this was as early as 1932. Which was an unimaginable objective given the comparable size, the power and size of each nation. However, remember that Japan did invade Russia, which was an absolutely huge nation. Now, the Rockefeller and Carnegie Foundations financially supported IPR, and the elite Wall Street alliance of Morgan and Rockefeller industrial interests controlled IPR policies. The IPR party line and the Kremlin party line were essentially the same. Morgan and Rockefeller, former competitors, joined forces given their common ambitions long before the official outbreak of World War II. The Rockefellers, who financed the IPR and its activities, simultaneously promoted American warfare against Japan. His competitors, Japan were his competitors for the oil and rubber resources in Southeast Asia, which threatened the Rockefeller dream of capturing the enormous China market for their innumerable petroleum products. Foreign markets for American oil companies were shrinking as crude oil prices declined. China adapted cheaper vegetable oils, causing Standard's monopoly in China to dramatically dwindle. The Soviets now controlled a quarter of what remained. Besides, The Japanese had preferential tariff agreements in their colony, Manchuria, and undersold everyone. By 1933, the Soviets were selling gasoline and oil to Siam and Japan, underselling the Anglo-Dutch and the Americans. By August 1933, Japanese businessmen decided to do business with only two foreign companies, Royal Dutch Shell, a Royal Dutch Shell subsidiary, and Saucony Vacuum, and the rest of the business would go to four Japanese firms, including Mitsui Busan, which received gasoline from Saucony. So this is all about oil. It's all about the markets, worldwide markets, and Standard Oil and their monopoly. Now, the Japanese Ministry of Commerce and Industry sought national control and petroleum self-sufficiency. On September 11, 1933, the ministry introduced comprehensive policies to strengthen control of refining and distribution and encourage greater refining capacity by offering government subsidies to private firms for oil exploration efforts. In 1934, Japanese officials enacted legislation that required licensing for refiners and importers and regulated them, which really vexed Western oil officials. To maintain their influence and profits, Saucony and Shell offered to invest in those refineries, but the Japanese rejected their proposals, which the companies encumbered with stipulations only beneficial to them. Japanese firms, including Matsukata, were faltering and blamed it on the foreign oil companies. They evaluated other oil-rich areas to satisfy their needs. Standard's local manager encouraged U.S. government intervention to force Japan to accept a set quantity of gasoline if they expected a continuation of American crude oil imports. Ambassador Grew directed the State Department to persuade Shell and Standard to cooperate in order to retain the Japanese market. However, the American oil overproduction and enormous quantities of Russian oil threatened continued high profits. On April 2, 1934, Walter C. Teagle, president of the Standard Oil Company of New Jersey, met with Interior Secretary and Oil Administrator Harold Ickes to enlist his help in enacting legislation to regulate crude oil production without affecting refinery productivity and marketing. Teagle also wanted the government to make the East Texas oil field a reserve. To further restrict domestic oil production, he wanted the government to issue interest-bearing bonds to smaller independent companies in exchange for their property. Pretty tricky. Standard, adept at controlling American policies, intended to use government power to maneuver the international market in the same way. Purging independent oil producers would limit oil exports to Japan and elsewhere and give exclusivity to Standard, Shell, and Texaco. Japan and China erroneously assumed that they could extract oil and control oil within their own countries or protectorates. How strange that they would think that. Beginning on February 1, 1934, the Chinese government levied an import tax on kerosene and gasoline to facilitate the future development of a national oil and gas industry in order to decrease dependence on foreign resources. America and British oil companies refused to do business under those conditions. Chinese officials relented, finally, but launched the four-year plan, a goal for domestic oil production in the Shanxi and Sichuan provinces with a potential yield of 80 million gallons per year from 500 wells. Be right back.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you have the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a one-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Sea Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tattler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com, for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Meet Jerry D.
Hi.
Jerry and his family, like you, are very concerned about world conditions and have gathered many emergency preparedness items, including turtle tough shelters.
We have added 2 24-foot turtle tufts to our supplies and feel very secure knowing our large family is ready for whatever the future may bring.
Turtle tough shelters are not tents. They are permanent yet portable four-season geodesic frame shelters that are as strong as a cabin at a fraction of the cost and are easy to set up, take down, and move anywhere. Available in two sizes. Get your Turtle Tough shelter and accessories included at TurtleToughShelters.com. That's Turtle, T-U-F-F, Shelters.com. Or call 801-623-3288. That's 801-623-3288. Or see them online at TurtleToughShelters.com. Turtle Tough Shelters, your all-season home away from home.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and we don't have a guest today. I'm talking about Japan and some of their history and what led up to 1941. Officials in Nanking arranged to work, and this is China, arranged to work with the Benedum Tree Company of Pittsburgh, a private oil exploration company. The U.S. Minister to China, Nelson T. Johnson, and the State Department disqualified the Benedum contract, claiming that the contract violated the United States policies against monopolies. They must not have heard about Standard, or that Standard had some exclusive connections to the State Department. The State Department then and now only protects selected American businesses while quashing others. Johnson witnessed similar oil nationalization moves in China and suggested that American oil companies hurry and negotiate with the Manchukuo monopoly for the sale of their crude oil and then liquidate their distribution apparatus in Manchukuo. Tokyo-based Ambassador Gru, friendly to Standard Oil, admitted futility in trying to influence the Japanese to abandon their self-sufficiency efforts and sent a dispatch to Washington suggesting an oil embargo against Japan. Teagle and Shell's leadership conferred with Ike's and State Department officials on August 22nd and 23rd, 1934. Oil companies refused to comply with Japan's new regulations because it would decrease their profits. They demanded an oil embargo and more representation to the Japanese government. Ike's could, if persuaded, authorize an embargo order against Japan. So more representation to the Japanese government meant more ambassadors to go over there and intimidate them and threaten them. Earl R. Dickover of the U.S. Embassy in Japan told Kurusu Saburo that, and he's a Japanese guy, that the U.S. government would impose an oil embargo if warranted, especially if Standard lost the Manchurian kerosene market. Kurusu emphasized that American oil companies accepted the loss of their vested interest in France and other countries with similar national oil objectives. The American oil companies asked Ambassador Gru to intervene in their behalf. Otherwise, as stated in Business Week, New York and London would force Japan into a showdown. Oil officials whined to Secretary Ike's, complaining about their financial losses. Henry Detering claimed that the British and the Dutch governments would support American actions. Teagle wanted an oil embargo and a restriction of oil exports to Japan by all producers. If independence balked, he was certain that the State Department could sway them. Detering went to Europe to sell the blockade proposal to the British and Dutch governments. Standard, Shell, and Texaco mutually agreed to cut off all oil to Japan. Now, keep in mind that Japan had no oil of her own. She did want to develop the resources that were in Manchuria and was doing that, but then the U.S. government did not allow the one company out of Pennsylvania to help them do that. Standard Oil of California and Union Oil of California were unwilling and instead gave a price quote to Japan. The independents received immediate pressure, capitulated, and withdrew their bids. In September 1934, Teagle, back in Washington, complained about the Associated Oil Group in California, which owned 50% of a Japanese refinery and had a long-term contract to supply that refinery with crude oil. Teagle wanted Ike's and the Interior Department's agencies to devise policies to alter the Associated Oil Group's arrangement. Standard and Shell officials maintained correspondence with the Japanese government officials. State Department officials wanted Standard to work with the British and Dutch oil producers and consider complying with the Japanese regulations. Teagle would not budge. Now remember, Teagle is with Standard. Surely, the U.S. government could dictate terms to Japan. After all, Japan had no significant alternatives and inadequate natural resources to be self-sufficient. American oil firms could cut Japan from other markets and restrict her access to oil-bearing lands. By mid-autumn 1934, Japan's oil situation was critical. On November 27, 1934, State Department representatives met with London's Foreign Office to consider their options. Teagle and Detering were unconcerned about Venezuela, Russia, or Mexico obstructing the embargo. However, Ike's might get pressure from some American oil companies. They decided to embargo both Japan and Manchuria. In confidential talks, desperate Japanese gas company representatives agreed to almost every demand after negotiations ended on April 13, 1935. However, we have to go to a break. We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
Your You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology, all while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com. Or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821. Or visit PureEffectFilters.com. Wouldn't you agree? Healthy people are happier and more productive. Obesity is the root cause of many health problems. Do you want to lose weight safely, look sexy and attractive without side effects and no chemicals? Lose weight without the side effects safely with Zeno's Organic Dietary Supplements. Made in the USA, 100% USDA certified organic. Visit www.zenos.com. That's www.zenohs.com. Try our products risk-free for a limited time offer. No purchase necessary. You only pay shipping and handling. Get your old, sexy body back now. Visit Zenos.com. Get your free supplements now. Visit Zenos.com right now. www.zenohs.com. That's www.zenohs.com.
As many of you know, natural supplements are fantastic for your body and have zero side effects. You need to restore your body's natural balance. Theravim strives to carry only the highest quality dietary supplements and natural vitamins that can be beneficial in helping your body recover from the impact of daily stress, allergens, illness, environmental pollution, and the aging process. Why buy from Theravim? Simple. Theravim provides a rewards program. Earn $1 for every $10 spent, free health consultations, free shipping on all orders, and an additional 10% discount on every order when you mention the coupon code RBN. Call 866-647-4372. That's 866-647-4372, or go to Theravim.com. That's TERRAVIM.com. Theravim, the best supplements on earth.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and I was talking about the confidential talks, the Japanese gas oil representatives. Now, keep in mind that Manchuria, that Japan won part of Manchuria in their war with Russia, and it was the part that Russia had some claim to. They had gone in there, put a lot of money into the area, sunk a lot of investments. There were some Russians living in the area. They were developing the oil and the other resources there. And when Japan won the war, it was a one-year war, and the main reason they won the war is because they were getting funded by the Jewish bankers, and the Jewish bankers said they would help Russia, but they just didn't deliver any of the ammunition that Russia needed. And so Japan, being a very small country but having a lot of ammunition and money behind them, won the war. It ended, as I said, in 1 year or less. And then they took over that part of Manchuria, and they renamed it Manchukuo. And so I was mentioning that in confidential talks, desperate Japanese gas company representatives agreed to almost every demand after the negotiations ended on April 13, 1935. However, that did not persuade the those officials to rescind the Japanese law. On April 18, 1935, a standard vacuum official Currency F. Co. asked the State Department to notify the company's Tokyo agent to reiterate that inasmuch as it was contractually impossible to stop sales of crude oil from California, Standard Vacuum intended to add an extra premium of 25 cents on Manchukuo exports. Co. warned of other obstacles and extra supply costs. In addition, Standard Oil or Texaco refused to ship any more oil to the Manchuria Oil Company. So the American industrial giants were going to get their way no matter what Japan did, no matter what laws they had. On May 18th, 1935, Standard Oil billed the Manchukuo government for damages and loss of business, a total of $1,781,880.59, including property and equipment. And of course, it's a bogus bill. Then in late September, the Japanese government stated that they had deferred the decision about reserve supplies until June 30, 1936. The oil companies objected, as other countries might follow suit. The oil companies finally accepted the storage regulations, but asked Mitsui to capitalize the storage facilities. The storage issue remained a problem throughout the summer of 1936. Meanwhile, the Japanese government obtained a petroleum concession in Mexico. However, East Asian prospects worsened. Ambassador Gru warned the State Department the Japanese insisted on self-sufficiency. They passed additional laws, such as the Synthetic Petroleum Production Law, the Imperial Fuel Development Company Law, and the Petroleum Resources Exploitation Law. The American oil companies experienced discrimination in Korea and Japanese-controlled China with no hopes of recovering their investments. Influential Anglo-American oil companies preferred profits over peace. They waged economic warfare against Japan throughout the 1930s. Their egregious actions against Japan, China, Thailand, and other countries throughout Asia revealed their priorities, all backed by the State Department. Ambassador Gru wrote, and I quote, "The application of economic pressure against Japan would inevitably start our relations on a downward course until we are prepared to face eventual war," unquote. Gru, understanding the oil interest, wrote, and I quote, "Economic pressures in the form of embargoes and other similar steps are a form of warfare, and they definitely constitute threats," unquote. Now, we know that that America and Britain have always used embargoes. They did it, Britain did it early during the 1812-1814 wars. On August 14th, 1936, at Chautauqua, New York, President Franklin D. Roosevelt said, and I quote, "We shun political commitments which might entangle us in foreign wars." What a joke. "We avoid connection with political activities of the League of Nations. We are not isolationists except insofar as we seek to isolate ourselves completely from war. I have seen war. I hate war. I have passed unnumbered hours. I shall pass unnumbered hours thinking and planning how war can be kept from this nation. I wish I could keep war from all nations, but that is beyond my power. I can at least make certain that no act of the United States helps to produce or promote war," unquote. That is so laughable, I cannot believe it. And this was in 1936, when he and Churchill were developing bombs in order to go to war against Germany. In 1937, Roosevelt planned to blockade Japan, but American citizens responded negatively to his quarantine speech of October 5th in the same year. So he temporarily scrapped his plan. In 1938, his war planners created a new preliminary plot for a naval war against Japan. Both Germany and the Soviet Union invaded Poland in September 1939. Britain and France ignored the Soviet invasion, but quickly declared war on Germany. American politicians, especially Franklin D. Roosevelt, intended on getting the country embroiled in warfare against Germany, despite what American citizens wanted. He promised neutrality if reelected, but insiders knew better. If an opportunity did not present itself, he would manufacture one. In August 1940, to prepare for war, Roosevelt assigned the National Guard to federal service for 1 year. He sent a peacetime draft, known as the Burke-Wadsworth Act, to Congress. And then Congress passed the Selective Training and Service Act of 1940 on September 14, 1940. Roosevelt traded 50 old American Navy destroyers to England in exchange for leases in Bermuda, the Bahamas, Jamaica, St. Lucia, Trinidad, and British Guiana. He signed legislation worth $5 billion to create a two-ocean navy that would ultimately incorporate 100 aircraft carriers. And this is in 1940, people. On September 27, 1940, Japan, Germany, and Italy, comprising the Axis powers, signed the Tripartite Treaty in Berlin, a military alliance which stipulated that if the Allied nations, which comprised Britain, the United States, and the Soviet Union, attacked any one of the three Axis nations, then all three of those nations would automatically be at war. The feasibility of Germany attacking America was zero due to Germany's lack of big planes. Germany was fortunate to be able to reach Britain with their lightweight planes. However, if America responded to a Japanese attack, then, according to the treaty, the United States would enter into the European War. On October 7, 1940, Lieutenant Commander Arthur H. McCollum, the head of the Far East Desk for U.S. Navy Intelligence, devised an eight-step plan entitled Estimate of the Situation in the Pacific and Recommendations for Action by the United States to Provoke Japan to Attack the U.S., supposedly to avert Japan's hegemony over East Asia. Number one, arrange with Britain to use British bases in the Pacific, particularly Singapore. Number two, arrange with Holland to use base facilities and acquisition of supplies in the Dutch East Indies. Number three, give all possible aid to the Chinese government of Chiang Kai-shek. Number four, send a division of long-range heavy cruisers to the Orient, Philippines, or Singapore. Number five, send two divisions of submarines to the Orient. Number six, keep the main strength of the American fleet now in the Pacific in the vicinity of the Hawaiian Islands. Number seven, insist that the Dutch refuse to grant Japanese demands for undue economic concessions, particularly oil. Number eight, completely embargo all American trade with Japan in collaboration with a similar embargo imposed by Britain. McCollum wrote, and I quote, if by these means Japan could be led to commit an overt act of war, so much the better. At all events, we must be fully prepared to accept the threat of war, unquote. This is just, is this awful or what? This document remained classified until 1994. Roosevelt immediately implemented McCollum's eight-step program. Accordingly, in October 1940, Roosevelt requested Navy Secretary Frank Knox to order Admiral James O. Richardson, Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Fleet in the Pacific, to position American naval ships across the Pacific Ocean in order to prevent Japan from obtaining crucial supplies. Okay, this was part of the blockade. Richardson protested that this blockade was an obvious act of war. His fleet, inadequately prepared for war, had previously patrolled the West Coast. He requested that his fleet be withdrawn from Hawaii, where they were totally exposed and vulnerable. Washington ignored his request. In January 1941, Admiral Kimmel replaced Richardson, and he quickly raised the same issues with President Roosevelt. On December 16, 1941, after Pearl Harbor, officials demoted Admiral Kimmel and relieved him of his command. Okay, on Jan- uh, well, backtrack just a bit here. On January 27th, 1941, and this was after the blockade and after all the things that they had done, after imposing the eight-step program, Ambassador Joseph Grew sent a telegram to Secretary of State Cordell Hull reporting the following, and I quote, "The Peruvian minister has informed a member of my staff that he heard from many sources, including a Japanese source, that in the event of trouble breaking out between the United States and Japan, the Japanese intend to make a surprise attack against Pearl Harbor," unquote. Hull was the architect, and just a side note, Hull was the architect of the federal income tax laws of 1913-1916 and was instrumental in establishing the United Nations. People refer to him as the father of the UN. He promoted regulated free trade, which people devised in order to stifle free enterprise and destroy national borders. Free trade is just another term for globalism and nationalization and internationalization. By January through March 1941, during the joint staff conferences in Washington, along with the Singapore Agreement of April 21st through the 27th, 1941, with the British, Roosevelt had persuaded American officials to wage a naval war against Japan if she so much as even crossed a particular point in the Pacific without a threat or an attack to any American ship or area. Roosevelt, backed by a highly biased and communist State Department, deployed the Pacific Fleet from San Diego to Pearl Harbor, contrary to the counsel of the admirals, Harold R. Stark and James O. Richardson, who, beginning in January 1940, was the Commander-in-Chief, United States American Pacific Fleet, and the Navy's authority on Pacific naval warfare and Japanese strategy. When told to deploy the fleet to Pearl Harbor, certainly a potential target of a Japanese attack, he refused to comply. However, as I mentioned before, Roosevelt overruled him, and he either resigned or the government relieved him of his command in February 1941. On July 26, 1941, Roosevelt froze all Japanese assets in the United States and closed the Panama Canal to all of that nation's shipping. Between November 27th and December 6, 1941, the state, war, and Navy departments received several warnings about Japanese intentions, including specific details like the exact hour and the date of the attack. American military commanders in the Philippines, General Douglas MacArthur, and Admiral Thomas Hart were part of the network that received decoded messages. American codebreakers had broken Japan's code using a device called magic. Operators could read messages sent to Japanese diplomats worldwide. The United States sent decoding machines to London, Singapore, and the Philippines, but not to Pearl Harbor. Unfortunately, General Short and Admiral Kimmel in Hawaii were not part of the network. Admiral Kimmel told Colonel Curtis B. Dahl, and I quote, "I found out later that the Japanese task force approaching Pearl Harbor had specific orders that if the American forces at Pearl Harbor became alerted before the attack was launched, their task force was to return at once to Japanese waters without attacking." So, can you imagine that? If the Americans knew, and if the Japanese found out, then the Japanese wouldn't have attacked. Okay, Henry L. Stimson, who belonged to Skull and Bones, was a Standard Oil attorney and an influential member of the ruling elite for decades. He was Secretary of State from 1911 to 1913 under William Howard Taft, who was also Skull and Bones, and President Herbert Hoover from 1929 to 1933, and was Roosevelt's War Secretary from 1940 to 1945. After meeting with Roosevelt on October 16, 1941, Stimson wrote in his diary, and I quote, "We face the delicate question of the diplomatic fencing to be done so as to be sure Japan is put into the wrong and makes the first bad move, overt move," unquote. On November 15, 1941, General George C. Marshall, Army Chief of Staff, swore a group of reporters to secrecy and told them that if war erupted with Japan, and I quote, "We'll fight mercilessly. Flying fortresses will be dispatched immediately to set the paper cities of Japan on fire. There won't be any hesitation about bombing civilians. It will be all out," unquote. He later received the Nobel Peace Prize for his European recovery program, the Marshall Plan, which redistributed U.S. wealth to well-connected corporations to rebuild Japan, to rebuild Europe after the British and the U.S. bombs had destroyed it. Okay, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Are you tormented with anxiety, depression, or other chronic symptoms of less than perfect health? In 2010, a few people got to participate in a groundbreaking discovery. Dr. Carolyn Dean, world-renowned authority on natural health, has recently patented a technology that is straight out of science fiction. And she invited me to try this product called RNA Drops. And within 12 hours of taking RNA Drops, I could feel an amazing sense of bliss. And since then, I've watched my troubles with depression and other health issues vanish into freedom and happiness again. Listen to hours of testimonials and get your trial bottle of RNA Drops at www.rnafreebottle.com. That's www.rnafreebottle.com.
Pay only shipping and handling and get your free trial bottle today at rnafreebottle.com.
If you're taking 1, 2, 5 or more nutritional supplements, please stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food supplement you can buy. Men, women, children, even Olympic athletes the world over have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. And now take just one nutritional supplement instead of many. The Bio Superfood formulas are whole food products composed with 4 of the most nutrient-dense algae found on Earth. Bio Superfood for the brain helps with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. If you can increase brain health, the rest of the body is a no-brainer. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity and is safe for you and your family. Learn more and order your Bio Superfood formulas at BioAge.com, spelled BioAge.com, BioAge.com, or call 877-288-9116. That's 877-288-9116. BioAge, the age of advanced organics.
Hey there, my name is Frank Bates. What I'm about to tell you in the next 60 seconds could get me in a lot of trouble. I just created a free video presentation at 123crooks.com that exposes the electricity monopolies and government agencies for what they really are: incompetent, lying crooks that are counting on your ignorance and fear to keep your power bills criminally high. Some have called this a conspiracy. Others have called it a cover-up. And you'll be shocked to find out how deep the conspiracy goes. My video at 123crooks.com exposes the truth and shows you the secret of how I beat them and how you can beat them too. Watch the controversial video that thousands of other smart patriots have already seen in the last 3 months. Go to 123crooks.com and discover one weird trick to slash your power bill and protect your home. Go watch my video now at 123crooks.com before they force me to shut it down. 123crooks.com.
We're talking about the Japanese situation in 1941. On November 25th, 1941, after another meeting with Roosevelt, Stimson recorded in his diary, and I quote, "The question was how we should maneuver them, the Japanese, into the position of firing the first shot without allowing too much danger to ourselves. It was a difficult proposition. unquote. On November 25, 1941, that same day, Roosevelt met with Secretary of State Cordell Hull, War Secretary Stimson, Secretary of the Navy Frank Knox, General Marshall, and Admiral Stark. The purpose of the meeting was to discuss how to provoke Japan to take the first shot. Without the approval or knowledge of Congress, and most certainly against every constitutional principle, they devised the war ultimatum, a list of 10 demands made to the government of Japan. The next day, Secretary Hull delivered Roosevelt's ultimatum to the Japanese ambassador, whose name I can't pronounce, at the State Department. Hull knew that the Japanese would never accept the ultimatum. Historian Charles Tansel wrote, and I quote, "The Japanese attack upon Pearl Harbor fulfilled the fondest hopes of the Roosevelt cabinet. It was easy now to denounce Japanese perfidy and to exult in the fact that the shock of the tragedy had erased all divisions of opinion in America," unquote. Japan, a group of islands, depended on the mainland for raw materials and food, so it was imperative that China remain free from communist takeover. The Japanese could not accept demand number 3 of Roosevelt's ultimatum, which said the government of Japan will withdraw all military, naval, air, and police forces from China and from Indochina. This withdrawal would have enabled a communist conquest of the mainland, and the communists would have subsequently starved the Japanese into submission. Consequently, this forced the Japanese to either attack or surrender. The other 9 demands were conditional upon Japanese compliance of demand number 3. Roosevelt, arrogant and pro-communist, had no business making any demands, but rather should have encouraged Japan in her efforts to rescue China from communism. However, Roosevelt's pro-communist foreign policy compelled Japan to launch a defensive war against the U.S. so that Roosevelt could justify entering the war against Germany, Japan's ally. On December 4, 1941, the government informed the public about the strategies developed by the Air War Plans Division through U.S. newspapers. They created AWPD, which is a Air War Plans, with European military industrial targets in mind. However, certain air war conspirators were already promoting incendiary attacks against Japan. Roosevelt, an honorary Pilgrim Society member, and Winston Churchill, also a Pilgrims member, and the Rothschild Minion, had already made commitments to fight against Germany before the attack on Pearl Harbor. Now, keep in mind that the Pilgrim Society is a very important society. You will not hear too much about it. Every single solitary president since the first Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, has been a member of the Pilgrim Society up to and including the president right now and the Secretary of State. All presidents and Secretary of States. Okay, we'll be right back after station ID.